This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Happy Wednesday. A lot of moving parts here on what otherwise would be a relatively quiet February 5th. Let me go ahead and get you set up. Tomorrow is the NBA trade deadline. Late last night, as many of you wake up, the biggest trade in terms of sheer player movement in 20 years occurs in the NBA. We will break that down for you. The biggest part is that Clint Capela has been traded from the Houston Rockets to the Atlanta Hawks. The decision by the Rockets effectively to play small ball. They won a game without playing a player taller than 6'6". They like the idea of opening up the court with Russell Westbrook and James Harden on the court together. A roll of the dice that it could make sense to go small. We'll see now what the Rockets try to do with their assets that they have acquired in the next 36 hours or so between now and the official NBA trade deadline arriving. So that is a big story that happened last night. Another big story that happened last night and has sent the city of Los Angeles into spasms of joy and excitement. We talked about Mookie Betts watch, where it turns out not only Mookie Betts watch, but also David Price watch, with the LA Dodgers making the trade to add, pretty impressively, to add Mookie Betts and David Price. I believe, so we got a loaded show for you, but I believe we have Ken Rosenthal from Fox Sports explaining this trade for Dodger fans that are waking up across the nation this morning. It is like Christmas morning because you guys are now favored to win the World Series. You've been so close over the last few years. Could this be the deal that puts you over the top? Here is what Ken Rosenthal had to say about this trade.
It's a very complex evening with a lot of things going on here, a lot of pieces moving. Actually, there are four teams involved in deals tonight, and the Dodgers are right in the middle of all of it. They are getting Mookie Betts and David Price and a significant amount of cash from the Red Sox. They're giving up Alex Verdugo to the Red Sox. They are also trading Kenta Maeda, their right-handed pitcher, to the Twins for Brusdal Graterol, prospect with a 100-mile-an-hour arm. Graterol will then go to the Red Sox as part of the Betts-Price deal. And then in a separate trade, the Dodgers are sending Jock Peterson to the Angels for the infielder Luis Rengifo. So a lot going on with the Dodgers, but a couple of key things here, Matt. One, the Dodgers are not giving up any of their top prospects. Verdugo is a player, a young player that they like, and is a guy who's been in the major leagues, but besides him, and he's not really a prospect at this stage, he's a major leaguer, they are not giving up Jeter Downs. They are not giving up Dustin May or any of their other top guys, and that is something that obviously will bode well for them. They're also redoing their outfield, right? Betts comes in, Peterson goes out, Price replaces Maeda in the rotation. Now, the Red Sox accomplish what they've been trying to do. They're going to get under the luxury tax threshold almost certainly with this pair of moves, and they lose Price, granted. They lose Mookie Betts also. They're not going to be as competitive next season, but what they're doing is they're getting a young player, an outfielder in Verdugo, to replace Betts. They're also getting an arm in Graterol. And they're going to get the benefits from getting under the threshold and resetting their penalty rate to the minimum, which will give them future flexibility in the years to come. I'm not sure Red Sox fans are going to love this. This is not a move for 2020. This is a move for the future.
All right, so that is relatively complicated. By the way, it's also the second signing day in college football, so some of the top players out there are committing to their classes. We are going to talk to John Morosi at the top of hour three, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. We got so many different moving parts in terms of guests. We're going to talk to a lot of people during the course of today's show. But let me go ahead and also I want to bring in Eddie Garcia. Eddie, I woke up this morning and my eyes rolled back into my head trying to break down all of this NBA trade. to me, it seems like the biggest part of this deal is pretty straightforward. It's that the Atlanta Hawks wanted Clint Capella, who's averaging a double-double, 13 and 13, to pair with their relatively young, talented team. All right, let's go to the NBA trade for a minute as NBA trade deadline gets closer. And the Rockets are freeing up some cap space and dollars to be able to make a potential big move still to come here with all of these different moving parts in the NBA. It doesn't seem like any of the players that are involved, it's the biggest trade since Patrick Ewing was moved 20 years ago. It doesn't seem otherwise like there's anything that happened, and there are a lot of different moving players, but I want you to confirm if I'm right here, that really changes in any way the fundamental trajectory of the NBA. This is about setting up the Rockets and their GM, Daryl Morey, to potentially make a move that he believes could vault them even higher into the NBA in the NBA championship race. Is that fair? You've probably had more time to dissect this thing than anybody else.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, when you hear four teams and 12 players, that certainly gets your attention, but there are really only two players involved that I think can have any kind of significant impact at all, and that's Robert Covington and Clint Capella. And Capella goes from the Rockets to Atlanta, and Covington goes from Minnesota to Houston. A lot of these other players are just, you know,
window
pieces.
Dressing.
Yeah. I mean, there's one player in here. Who was it that is a name that you might be familiar with, but he's injured. He's not going to play this year at all. So that's just, again, another piece that's being moved because of a contract. Gerald Green was a guy that some people might be familiar with, but he's hurt all year. He's not even going to play, and he's a guy who's just going to be waived. So a lot of pieces involved, but really, again, only two players that could have some impact, and that's Robert Covington and Clint Capella.
And the move is about setting up the Rockets to make another move, right? Like, this isn't the move that the Rockets are trying to get to. Gets Clint Capella off their roster, allows them to go small, but gives them assets to make another move, and we're not really sure what that one's going to be.
Well, yes, we'll see if that next move happens. They'll try, but I'm not sure exactly what they're looking to do.
All right, so that is what's going on in the NBA. I want to bring in the LA crew now as well, because the Mookie Betts David Price edition makes the Dodgers a substantial favorite to win the World Series this year, which would be the first since 1988. Big move by the Red Sox to basically go back to the drawing board and rebuild their roster with good young talent. But what is the reaction in the City of Angels, Danny G, for all of you crazed Dodger fans when you saw this news? Do you feel like you got a steal?
This is massive. Yeah, I mean, David Price's price tag is huge, but the Red Sox are going to pay half of it.
Yep.
So the Dodgers basically got Mookie Betts in a salary dump, which is amazing because he's a face of a franchise.
Yep.
He's a top five player. A lot of baseball experts say Betts is second best only to Mike Trout, followed by reigning NL MVP Cody Bellinger, who is now Betts' partner in the Dodger outfield. So, yeah, to say LA is hyped is an understatement. Now, on the other hand, it does put pressure on the Dodgers because this is similar to the Lakers and what happened with Anthony Davis, where, you know, he's going to be a free agent. So it's almost like a tryout with the Dodgers to see if he fits in, if he likes it, if he loves the city. And then the Dodgers obviously could sign him to a huge contract. And the word was the Dodgers were going to go after him in free agency anyways. So they get him a season early, which is pretty awesome. Now, haters were all over Twitter saying, oh, the Dodgers are trying to buy a ring. But you could actually argue that that is what happened to the Red Sox, and that's what they did, because that's why they were in luxury tax hell.
How is that a hater? Like, the goal is to win a championship. So if you believe you have otherwise a team that is built that is capable of winning a championship, and Mookie Betts and David Price could put you over the top, and we know how close the Dodgers have been, how achingly close the Dodgers have been to a championship, don't you have to just go after it? I kind of respect the Dodgers going all in here and saying this is our time.
Well, you're thinking about it logically. How dare you?
Yeah.
Dodger fans, on the other hand, we've been a little frustrated here because obviously they have a ton of money to work with their own TV network that a lot of us in Los Angeles can't see.
Still.
And yet they lean on their farm system and now analytics with their front office. And so they haven't exactly been the biggest players in the free agent market, which has frustrated a lot of Dodger fans. Now, they do have a lot of guys that are homegrown on what you could call rookie deals, similar to what the Chiefs, you know, have with Pat Mahomes, like Bellinger, for instance, way underpaid for him being an MVP. That put them in this position to make this deal, which, man, I mean, that lineup, potentially 7 All-Stars as starters for the Dodgers.
Roberto, were you psyched beyond belief?
Oh, yeah, man, this is a 10. Before this, the Dodgers hadn't done anything. They signed the reliever Mike Trinan and pitcher Alex Wood. I'm stoked, man. Mookie, like Danny mentioned, is the second best player in baseball over the past 5 years. His 39.7 WAR trails only Mike Trout during that span. And also, the Dodgers didn't have to give up Gavin Lux, their number 2 prospect, according to MLB.com. And they didn't have to give up their number 1 pitching prospect in Dustin May, which is why they got the Twins involved. And then David Price hasn't been great and struggled in Boston, but pitching in Dodger Stadium and not having to face the DH, at least for this year, it's going to help. It's going to help him tremendously.
Eddie, are you a Dodger fan? I can't remember.
No.
Yeah. So this you're miserable.
No, I'm not miserable. I just, the pressure's on. I mean, they haven't won a World Series since Kirk Gibson. I'm 1988, for crying out loud. So, I mean, the pressure is on. The expectations are high. And we'll see if the Dodgers can finally deliver because, you know, with all due respect to Danny, Roberto, and all the other Dodger fans that work here, they've been chokers for many years.
Well,
so
you can't call them chokers when in 2017 the Astros cheated, so you can't really say they choked. I mean, they should have won that World Series in 6 games.
Didn't.
Yeah, because the Astros were cheating.
Okay, all right. That makes you feel better. Go ahead.
These two guys, by the way, Dub, you live here in Nashville with me. These are both Nashville-born baseball players. Mookie Betts is building a big-time mansion. Like it's like a Best Western that he's building for himself, not far from where I live. And David Price spends most of the offseason as well here in Nashville. He played for Vanderbilt baseball, grew up in the Nashville area. Like, this is a big-time addition for the Dodgers, right? Like, we just talked to the Dodger fans, but even if you're not a Dodger fan, this is a big swing.
Oh, there's no doubt. And you mentioned these guys are from Nashville. Mookie Betts is, you know, relatively close to my age. And I have some buddies here that grew up here that played baseball and played against Mookie Betts in high school growing up and all that. And they tell stories about him and just how unbelievable he was back in the day. And obviously, he still is. But, yeah. It's a huge get for the Dodgers. If you just look at their World Series odds and how they've changed, it's definitely a significant
move.
What
are the latest moves in the World Series odds?
Well, they're now a clear-cut favorite. I know that. I need to check the exact numbers, but, I mean, they are.
Yeah, I'm going to pull that up while you're talking on FoxBet because it is a
– It's 4-1, yeah.
4-1 now. That's a pretty big favorite in baseball, where usually there's a lot of moving parts.
Yeah, they went from 7-1 to 4-1.
Yeah, I mean that is rare. Now there's always a lot of people who come running in and want to grab this. Actually, it's interesting that according to FoxBet, and everybody's a little bit different, the expectation would be Yankees Dodgers World Series now, with the Yankees 3.5-1. They're actually favored at FoxBet. Dodgers 4.5-1. Then the Astros, the Braves, the Nats, the Cardinals, the Phillies and the Cubs are all 20-1 or less, would be according to FoxBet. But this is a monster move. So we will continue to talk about this. John Morosi is scheduled to join us. Let me tell you all the people that we have lined up for the program, and these are all in Hour 2 and Hour 3. We are talking with Barton Simmons from 24/7 Sports, national recruiting analyst for 24/7 Sports, at the top of Hour 2. So 7 a.m. Eastern, he is scheduled to join us. Then we have Jeff Schwartz is scheduled to join us. Then in Hour 3, we're going to be joined by John Morosi and Shannon Spake. So all of that still to come. 4 guests in Hour 2 and Hour 3 talking about all these big moves that are going on in the world of sports. So you can get ready for that. In the meantime, we will continue to talk about all the big trades and everything that's going on in the world of sports. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. And I want to tell you, Valentine's is close, All right? I want all of you to listen to me closely because I have an offer for you that expires today. All right? That means today. You have no excuse not to go ahead and take care of your wife or your girlfriend or maybe your side chick. Just tossing it out there. Side chicks need love too, all right? You have got Valentine's Day arriving. In my house, I have this exact bouquet. It arrived. I tried to get credit for it. My wife wouldn't have any of it. She said they just send this to you because you do ads. This doesn't count as a Valentine's Day gift. They send it to you for free to our house. Don't try and take credit for it. I tried to take credit for it. It didn't work because it's fantastic. We got the 18-stem Enchanted Rose Medley in my house right now. It's at the center of our kitchen. It's fantastic. My wife and her girlfriend were over at the house today. They were talking. I said, every girl wants roses. They said, that's true. A lot of girls claim that they don't, but they all want roses. You never go wrong with roses, especially when you can get 18 of them for $29.99, or you can double it, 36 of them, for just $49.99. That's 1-800-FLOWERS. They are picked at their peak, shipped overnight to ensure freshness. They're fantastic. I got them in my house right now, and right now all it costs you is $29.99, only $49.99 for 36 of them, 18 of them for $29.99. The bouquet prices are going to be going up soon. That's why you have to order them right now, today, all right? Here's what you need to do, because some of you knuckleheads out there are reaching out to me on Twitter saying, I can't figure out how to do this. This is not complicated. Don't blow it, all right? You go to 1-800-Flowers.com. Easy website, 1-800-Flowers.com. I checked it out. I did it, all right? Click the radio icon. There is a radio icon on the right side of the page. It says radio offers. Click the radio button. Put in the code OUTKICK. Boom. It pops up right in the center of your screen. It works. It's easy. Again, 1-800-Flowers.com. Click the radio icon. Go in. Put in the code OUTKICK. $29.99. 18 roses. $49.99. Or 36 roses. We have this in my house. It's fantastic. Your girl, your wife, your side chick, they're all going to love you for this. 1-800-Flowers.com. Don't mess up. Valentine's is coming soon. Take care of it today. This is OutKick on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of OutKick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
And that's how you bring home a dub. Speaking of bringing home a dub, it's exactly what Jeff Schwartz did in being able to be there sitting in Miami watching his brother Mitch play on the offensive line for the Chiefs. How nerve-wracking was it, Jeff, to be in the stadium watching your brother play in the Super Bowl?
It wasn't that bad, I think, because I just kind of know how games go, and I knew that in the fourth quarter was when I really had to get nervous, and they were down 20-10. And that the third, I was pretty nervous on the 3rd and 15, because 3rd and 15, they don't convert that, game is probably over. I mean, yeah, there's not enough time for the for anything to happen. And so when they converted that, I felt pretty good. And then obviously when they scored to go down 20-17. And then you'll kind of feel the momentum shift a little bit, the confidence in the stadium shift a little bit, and then I felt a lot better. I mean, with Pat Mahomes, though, you really never have to be too nervous. But the Niners have him, man. The Niners played the game they wanted for 53 minutes.
Do you think now that Patrick Mahomes has won a Super Bowl, what would you put the over-under at for total number of Super Bowl appearances for Patrick Mahomes in his career?
So this one's always tricky, right? So if you look at the history of the NFL, there's not many quarterbacks who had even three appearances in the
Super Bowl,
right?
Yeah.
We have obviously the ones that have won, you know, Bradshaw and Montana and Brady, but otherwise
Manning and Elway,
Elway made four, right?
I think he lost the first three. Yeah.
So you have like six quarterbacks all time that have made like over two Super Bowls. So, the numbers would say probably not likely. I'd probably say that maybe 3.5 would be the over-under, even maybe 2.5. I don't, it's just historically speaking,
doesn't happen very much. And I know that we are a society that likes to talk about the future very quickly and move on to dynasty talk. But, I mean, the Chiefs were very close to losing that game, and all of a sudden they're now a dynasty. So it's interesting to see how we frame some of these wins and losses. The Chiefs did a great job in the playoffs. You know, they came back from double-digit deficits in three straight games, which is very unlikely. Kind of things broke their way. I'm happy for them, obviously, but I think dynasty talk feels way premature.
The Chiefs have their celebration, I think, at like 12:30. People are already lining up in Kansas City for it. What did you do after the game? Did you meet up with the Chiefs? When did you see your brother for the first time?
So my dad went on the field, so I waited underneath the stadium for him to come back. He had a great picture of my brother. And then we went to the team hotel, which was crazy. And then they had the team party. So most of the players went to live, I think. Huh. And then all the family and friends went to the team party. They had Flo Rida, and then Pitbull came on like at 1:30.
No, oh,
Pitbull
wow.
Came on like Pitbull was like at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
He put it on. Good show. He was on for an hour, good hour.
From 2 to 3 a.m.?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I was hoping Andy Reid would come on stage and start dancing, but that didn't happen. And it basically was just a bunch of family and friends. I mean, I saw, obviously, my brother was there for a little bit. Mitch went back. I saw like three or four other players. Otherwise, I think everyone was at Live or sleeping or somewhere else celebrating. But it was a lot of fun to be there that night and celebrate with the team.
So how much sleep did you get?
So I slept, I went to bed at 4, but I slept till 10 a.m., I think, which is, I have not slept past maybe 9 a.m. since I was in high school. I don't, like, ever sleep that late. Even the night before, I was up till 3, the Chainsmokers deal, the Baxham party, I woke up at, like, 7:30. Like, I don't ever sleep in. So it was nice to get a little sleep. Yesterday, we spent Monday, we went back to South Beach, and just slept all day. It was awesome.
So what did your tickets, what was the face value on your tickets for the Super Bowl?
They were $3,300 a piece. I'm hoping Mitch forgets.
Yeah, you were saying earlier, so far your brother hasn't demanded a payment for the tickets?
No, and they won, so I think that lessens the blow, because he makes more money with his bonus because they won. So actually, he was about to break even with the amount of tickets he bought if they had lost. But since they won, he'll make money on the Super Bowl. So I'm hoping that he forgets, doesn't ask me for them, for the money. And, yeah, I mean, it was. Look, here's the thing, too. I didn't even fit in the seat. I need a refund. I didn't fit in the seat. I'm sitting in $1,300 seats. I didn't even fit. I had to stand almost the whole game because my big butt didn't fit in the seat.
What about your wife? Was that $3,300 well spent?
No, it wasn't well spent. She wanted to Uber home in the middle of the game. I'm like, no, you're not Ubering home in the middle of the Super Bowl. I don't like football. Like, what am I going to do? Just sit here and walk? Like, just so she did enjoy taking a picture of me buying a hamburger because she thought it was cool that I was a fan. And I was like, okay, all right. So I have a picture of myself holding a Diet Coke and a tray with a burger and a bag of chips. Really funny.
You said your wife really was most excited about going to Miami for the Super Bowl because she got to buy new outfits. How did the outfits rate?
She asked me to rate them. They were good. Just the one thing, like, we have a couple great stories. You know, the Friday night monsoon that happened, we got stuck in it at the Barstool party. We left and we walked. I looked it up. We walked over half a mile in the torrential downpour to get far enough away so we could get an Uber that wasn't stuck in traffic. And so we found a parking garage, and we hid in the parking garage, and we called the Uber, and we told the dude, I'm like, look, man, I'm in this parking garage between, like, 24th and 23rd. Just pull in here. We're soaking wet. I'll pay you extra, you know, to take us home. And dude was totally chill with it. But also, too, because my wife, when we got to Uber, she took her pants off.
Oh, man.
She didn't want to sit in wet pants.
Yeah.
So she sat in the Uber, and I took my shirt off and my shoes and socks and just, like, sat there in my shorts in the Uber. Dude was totally chill with it. He didn't even have leather seats. He had cloth seats. So the dude took us an hour back to the hotel, and we were soaking wet with his cloth seats in his in his big old SUV. I threw him at 50 extra, but he was totally chill about it. But that was Friday night. The rain was ridiculous.
Yeah, huge storm hit. And then when did you come back? So you celebrate, you get to have the fun, and then you come back when?
So I told my wife we want to come back Monday. We originally planned to say, look, if the Chiefs win, Monday's not a good day to come back because we're going to be tired. You're going to be hungover. Like, it's not good. So let's go back on Tuesday. So we went back to South Beach. We stayed at Delano, which has a great pool. And then, unfortunately, my wife actually got food poisoning, so she spent the afternoon in the bathroom. And I just watched, I went to dinner by myself, and I watched Oregon women's basketball play UConn. That's just living the dream on South Beach on Monday night.
Wild night. As you look ahead, like, there are a lot of free agents, right, that are moving around out there.
Yeah.
What do you think? Do you buy into Brady leaving the Patriots,
no,
or would you be stunned?
I would be stunned. I have said it a million times. I think there's almost no chance Tom Brady leaves the Patriots. Think about this. At his age, why would he make a money play? Like, I don't, like, now you make a money play at 42, 43, decide, hey, I want to make the most money I can to play quarterback. No, you're playing to win football games and win the Super Bowl. And the Patriots have a great chance as currently situated if they just bring him back. They'd have to commit to adding a tight end. I think Hunter Henry's a free agent. That'd be a perfect fit, I think, for New England. You add another wide receiver or two, and your offensive line is fine. Everyone's back. And you ride it back this year. I don't know how you would – I know people would put money on the Chiefs, but if Tom Brady comes back and they add a couple pieces on offense, and they have some free agents they got to figure out what to do on defense – they're going to be extremely good again next year. And the thing about the NFL right now, I feel like more than ever, there is parity, which is actually kind of rare in the NFL. People, I think there's parity, but there never really has been because the Patriots have been so good for so long in the AFC. But you look at the AFC, the Chiefs are going to be good, obviously. The Ravens are going to be good. The Patriots are going to be good. The Steelers with Big Ben are going to be good next year. And the Browns can be good, right? I mean, there's all these teams that you know, theoretically can be good or should be good. The Texans are going to be good as long as Deshaun Watson's there. I mean, there's all these teams that are good or can be great, and we haven't had that for a long period of time in the AFC.
When you look ahead, it's National Signing Day Part 2, and we talked with Barton Simmons when we just finished the segment. What was your signing day like?
Is there anyone even left to sign? Like, I don't even
20%, 20% according to Barton Simmons, ish. 20 to 25% of the top recruits did not sign early. So yeah, it's like 75 or 80% of most classes are in, but there's still some guys out there.
Yeah. I'm not even sure. I know, obviously, I'm Oregon. I think we're 11th or 12th in 24/7. I'm hoping that we move up to top 10. We'll see. I don't think there's anyone even left to sign. So my signing day was 2004, and I woke up early, and I sent my fax up to Eugene, and then went to high school, and that was the end of my day. I mean, like, it wasn't a big deal. There was no signing ceremony. There was no pub about it. I didn't call anyone in the morning. I was committed to Oregon, so it didn't matter. And that was the end of it. Is fax machine still a thing? Is that what we're still using, still a fax machine?
I think the fact that you can take picture now of your thing and sign it in. Like, the last question for you, as a Dodger hater, how much upset are you about Mookie Betts and David Price to the Dodgers?
Well, it makes it more fun because when the Dodgers win 127 games in the regular season and then lose in the playoffs, you take even more joy. I mean, they're trying so – bless their hearts, Clay. They're trying so hard to win a title. I mean, they're trying – hardest they can, and they just can't do it. Now their rotation is not very good. They have four lefties in their rotation. Two of them are at the end of their career, and they're not a very balanced team. It's okay. They'll win all their games they can in the West. They'll win the West for the eighth year in a row, Danny, and you're losing the playoffs again for the eighth year in a row, and everything will be all right with the world come October.
Were you stunned by Mark D'Antonio stepping down the day before signing day, even if it's now the second signing day?
Yes, but it seems like there's other things that are happening behind the scenes. I mean, for one, of course, he got that bonus, right, which is ridiculous. I mean, look, I get it.
$4.3 million on January 15th he got paid for a longevity bonus.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he planned this out, but it feels like there's something behind it. I know that there was the article yesterday about, you know, some documents in court that shed some light on some things that he did, but those weren't that bad. If you look at it, what it actually said, I mean, it was like he gave a you know, he went through compliance to, like, you know, get a coach, you know, a parent a job at the school. I mean, not even that bad. So something else has got to be coming out soon about him, because this is so abrupt. It's out of nowhere. It's at the weirdest time possible. The coaches never resign this time of year. If anything, they resign, you know, like you know, Chris Peterson did, right? Which is, you know, we'll pass on to someone in the, you know, in the program. We'll do it in December. So it feels like there's something fishy that'll come out eventually, and we'll find out what it is. But it's, you know, it's a good Big Ten job, right? I think we, on my show yesterday, we're talking about sixth best job probably in the Big Ten, fifth. So we'll see who gets it.
Good stuff as always, Jeff Schwartz. We'll talk to you next week, my man.
All right, take care, bud.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Major news across the landscape here. Let's hit some of it right off the top as we get ready to be joined by John Morosi, our Major League Baseball insider. We've got Mookie Betts and David Price being traded to the Dodgers. We're about to break that down. A lot of different movement in the NBA in a big trade reported last night by Adrian Wojnarowski. But really, the only major player moving, Clint Capela going from the Houston Rockets to the Atlanta Hawks. And it appears that the Rockets are trying to set up an opportunity to make another trade as they go small ball with Russell Westbrook and James Harden. We'll see exactly how that shakes out, but there is about 36 hours remaining before the NBA trade deadline is complete. We'll see whether any major moves are made there. In addition to that, Mark D'Antonio steps down. That probably interests John Morosi a little bit as we bring him in, because he is a Michigan Wolverine and I believe is with us usually from Ann Arbor. John, appreciate you joining us. I'll actually start with that question for you. Were you surprised by the timing, given it's National Signing Day Part 2, that all of a sudden Mark D'Antonio, who has been a real nemesis for Michigan Wolverine fans, is out?
Good morning, Clay. Yeah, I was surprised. I think the timing really, I think, caught everybody here across the state by surprise. I think certainly when people woke up yesterday, there was no thought that there was going to be big news from East Lansing of that kind. And it was interesting. One name that popped into my mind, Robert Saleh, right? The defensive coordinator from the Niners, a Michigan native. So maybe I think that'd be a great hire, given how much respect he has in the game. So we'll see where the Spartans go from here, but certainly a very tough time of year for them to start a coaching search.
All right, so we're talking to John Morosi at JON_MOROSI, who is our Major League Baseball insider. The big news for people waking up on the West Coast is Mookie Watch is over. Mookie Betts to the Dodgers officially done, as is David Price. What exactly took place? Why did it happen? And what is going on here, in your mind, should the Dodgers be the favorite now, having made this big deal?
Well, Clay, they are the favorites for me. I think that when you consider where they've been, they have at times tried to make major moves at the deadline. The Darvish move was one. Manny Machado was another. But Mookie Betts has, I believe, of all the trades they've made, the greatest overall impact. And a star they needed for a long time. They've been looking for a really impactful righty bat to put in the middle part of their lineup. Of course, we know he can move all around the diamond, play in the outfield. He's someone that to me is just, he is a prototypical superstar of the modern day. He can hit 300, he can hit for power, he can steal bases. He's just a special player. Of course, he's been a former American League Most Valuable Player. So he, to me, is an ideal person to bring in for the Dodgers, because they have had so many postseason failings in successive years that if they had not made a major move, it would have been a real disappointing way to begin the season, and all the talk in Glendale, Arizona this spring would have been about how the Dodgers still can't find a way to win the big one. And now you instead have a superstar of Mookie's stature coming into the clubhouse, along with David Price, who's, I think, really going to help out the rotation a lot. It's just a really compelling storyline, and I think we'll take the focus for the Dodgers off of what have been disappointing Octobers and place it on a very positive spin of things, and now looking ahead to a 2020 where, as you point out, Clay, I don't see a better team in the major leagues right now than the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Why are the Red Sox doing this?
Money is a big part of the motivation, Clay, and it's really staggering to say it. And for a market like that that's certainly had so much success and had such a rich history, but their payroll is a little bit out of step right now, and they really had to find a way to bring that payroll back down into a below that $208 million luxury tax threshold. And so this move really was, I think, geared toward, number one, getting themselves under the luxury tax penalty threshold. That was a big thing for them. And number two, just repositioning themselves for the future, because they've calculated, rightly or wrongly, that they are not going to be able to sign Mookie Betts long term. And I think Chaim Bloom, their new GM, someone who came in from the Tampa Bay Rays, does a very good job, that organization does, of making some pretty discerning decisions about where they're at as an organization and calculating, okay, what are our chances of finishing ahead of the Yankees right now? And if they're not very high, then you just make the best deal you can and move on. And I think that's probably where they were at. They probably thought, our chances of beating the Yankees in 2020 are not very high, and as a result, we're going to have to adjust and position ourselves for the future a little bit better. And that's what they had to do. It's a very tough decision. You don't really ever see the Red Sox making a move like this, but they're doing it now. And it's the departure of one of their most popular players ever. And I thought it was interesting, the note from Dan Shaughnessy in this morning's Boston Globe. How about this, Clay? It's now 100 years and about 1 month since they sold Babe Ruth to the Yankees. So a century later, another superstar heading out of town.
That is amazing when you look at the trajectory there. Now let's talk for a minute about the larger picture of Major League Baseball as we get closer and closer to pitchers and catchers reporting. Is this story with the Houston Astros and to a lesser extent with the Mets and their association with it, is it over? Or do you think this thing is only going to continue to grow? Or has it been put to bed?
Well, that's a great question, Clay. I think that first and foremost, we're still waiting on the commissioner's office to render a conclusion on the investigation into the Red Sox. That will probably happen around the start of spring training, which, oh, by the way, is next week. And the Red Sox, notably, still do not have a manager after they dismissed Alex Cora. So that's been a very busy start to Chaim Bloom's tenure in so many ways, both expected and unexpected, I think, for him. But so we're still waiting on the commissioner's office to render an opinion and a verdict there as to what penalties and sanctions that the Red Sox may face. I think to a larger extent, Clay, do I believe that if I had to bet your house on it, so to speak, do I think the only two teams that were cheating were two of the last three teams to win the World Series? And I would say probably not. But I don't have anything firm at this point in time to say that any other team was doing it. I think we have to just constantly, at this moment in the game's history, brace yourself for the possibility that there could be more revelations. I have no idea from where they would come, but it just seems logical when you consider how prevalent it seemed to be, I guess, at that point in time, that there could be more things coming out. The one thing I would note is if we do not have other teams named in the next year or so, I think it further clouds the legacy of the Houston Astros. I think we already realize, contrary to what owner Jim Crane said, certainly there is a pretty substantial taint on their 2017 title. But if they're found and if no other credible accusations come out in the next year or so, then we start to reflect on, wow, maybe they were part of a small handful of teams that were doing it, and I think it casts even more doubt on the achievements of the team itself and certainly the players on that roster as well.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that, and we're talking to John Morosi. Do you think the punishment was significant and severe enough given the allegations that have been proven?
I do. That to me was a pretty significant penalty. Aside from MLB, and this is where I think precedent was important. MLB has never stripped titles, so to speak, from teams. And so if they had done it here, then the question would have come, okay, well, do we then have to take away a title from every single team that had a player who was named in the Mitchell Report on steroid use in baseball and wipe out that that era? So I think that would go down a road that the commissioner was probably not comfortable going down. And I think, frankly, that he was correct in doing that. I think it creates too many issues, I think, that if you started doing penalties of that type. So short of that, they did basically, in my view, everything you could have done. The financial penalty was the maximum allowed under MLB's constitution. Draft picks in multiple years, that was a pretty big penalty. And the two most prominent people in the organization from a management standpoint both lost their jobs. So that's a pretty significant change and really a dramatic set of circumstances that have befallen the franchise now, a team that was 9 outs away from winning the World Series on Halloween night, I believe, or November the 1st. So it is a really dramatic situation there. And I think that baseball, in a very tough circumstance, Clay, did what I believe to be a very good job in penalizing the Astros thoroughly and appropriately last month.
We're talking to John Morosi. Okay, so I know you said I think pitchers and catchers start to report next week, which is crazy for a lot of people out there who are ready for winter to be over. It's not that far away. In your mind, should the Yankees in the AL and the Dodgers in the NL be considered substantial prohibitive favorites even to win their respective sides and meet in the World Series?
They should be, and I guess that the one thing, Clay, about baseball, and I agree with what you said, I think that those are the two favorites. You think about the Yankees and Gerrit Cole and the move they made there. Baseball, though, I think unlike, let's say, the NBA, it's harder for the favorites to make it all the way through. I think that when you see in the NBA in the summertime, teams that win the offseason, so to speak, often are there in the final two teams playing in June of the following year, or at least among that group. And I think in baseball, it's just not that way, which I think is part of the drama of it. The Dodgers have been, in many ways, the dominant team of baseball since 2013, and they've won the division every year since then, but they've never won the World Series. And I think that is very instructive of how much parity there is in the game, how you can really it's a matter of who gets hot at the right time and dealing with that pressure of October baseball. So I do think that both the Yankees and the Dodgers have brought in proven playoff performers. And David Price, while he had a number of years where he was not a great October performer, that has changed. He was clutch in the World Series in 2018, arguably the MVP of that World Series. So there's I think, a lot to like for the Dodgers, bringing in both Mookie and David, and then with the Yankees to address their need with Gerrit Cole, I think was very impressive, and it really spoke to what they needed to do right now. So it's and also I think the biggest thing, too, Clay, is the Astros. I mean, how do they respond to a very turbulent offseason? I don't think they'll be quite the same team this year. I really don't. Do you see a team like the Angels or the A's or the Rangers making a big move in that division and winning the AL West as the Astros are somewhat weakened? I think that the Yankees adding Gerrit Cole and also what's happened to the Astros, of course they lost Gerrit Cole and now they've lost their way a little bit. I think the Yankees are clearly the best team in the American League, and the Dodgers right now, I feel the same way about them in the NL.
Last question for you, and we're talking with John Morosi, JON_MORSI. He is our Major League Baseball insider. You said that the Red Sox couldn't afford to do a long-range deal with Mookie Betts. Are the Dodgers going to be able to afford to do a long-range deal that keeps him in L.A. for years and years to come?
That's an excellent question. I believe the answer is yes, Clay. But one of the key things for the Red Sox was they had signed a lot of other pitchers to large contracts that really crowded out their possibility to re-sign Mookie, and that included Chris Sale and Nathan Eovaldi, by the way, who both begin this season with some pretty big health questions. Whereas the Dodgers, somewhat surprisingly, have done a very good job of not having a lot of big contracts on their books. While they are a large market team and they've been a superstar-laden roster, their payroll actually is in pretty good shape. And so as a result, I believe they've got the flexibility to sign Mookie long-term. Do I think it'll happen before opening day? I'm not sure. I do think Mookie would like to test free agency. He's worked so hard to have this opportunity, and he's really been outspoken in wanting to become a free agent. But you do wonder if the Dodgers really show him the right amount of respect right away with a big-time deal and a lot of really affirmative words about how important he is to their future. I could see, Clay, Mookie signing long-term there, which would be a fantastic place for him to play for a very, very long time.
Outstanding stuff as always, John Morosi. Appreciate you waking up early with us. Enjoy signing day and the start of baseball, which is not very far away.
My pleasure, Clay. Always love catching up, my friend. Look forward to the next time.
Yeah, that is John Morosi.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We are joined now by Shannon Spake. I hope she is doing well. She joined us last week on Radio Row in Miami. I know you had a couple of late nights, Shannon. Have you recovered? You're usually an early morning riser, but you were up late a few nights.
Well, I was up late Tuesday night, as you know, because I saw you in the bar
yes.
at the hotel. And the only other late night that I had, Clay, was Friday night sitting on the tarmac at the Miami International Airport trying to get home early to my kids when that awesome storm rolled
in. Oh, wow,
and,
yeah.
Didn't end up walking into my house until 4 a.m. So I probably should have just stayed and gone out with everybody because I probably felt the exact same way on Saturday that I would have if I had stayed and gone out. Did you make it to any parties?
I did. I went out Friday. I flew back late Saturday night. So I'm curious. This is always a tough situation. How long did you have to sit on like the tarmac? Because the storm, we were talking with Jeff Schwartz earlier an hour or two for anybody who was in Miami. Like about 9:30, 10 o'clock on Friday night, a massive storm rolled through in Miami. I knew it was going to be a bad storm when I got a text alert from Fox Sports Security, which I didn't even know they had my email, had my text message to send that out. But it just absolutely blew up. And so you were already on a plane when that happened?
Yeah, so our flight was delayed. It was supposed to leave at 7:30, so we left right after the NASCAR Race Hub show. I was supposed to fly out Saturday morning, but I decided to change it a little early, come home, just surprise the kids because I hadn't seen them all week. And so our flight was delayed a little bit, so we actually got on the plane about 10:15. We literally pulled back from the gate, and that monsoon moved in. To give the pilot a ton of credit, I can't stand it when I'm sitting on a plane and I have no idea what's going on, why we're delayed, right, why we're waiting, what's going on. And he was coming on like every 5 minutes and telling us. So then the storm moves out, and he comes on and says that the winds have shifted and they're not able to flip the runway. So we had to then wait for the winds to either die down or go back the opposite way. All things I'm fine with, by the way, because I would much prefer to be sitting on the ground and know that there's an issue rather than trying to take off. But the dude next to me, I mean, he must have been out late the night before because he was snoring so loud. I mean, I looked over at one point and he was like drooling, and everyone, you know, sitting around me was, I mean, it was quite interesting. But, you know, hey, it's part of it. I had a blast down there. By the way, Jeff, I listened to the interview with Jeff Schwartz, and I'm going to probably go out on a limb here and say that Uber driver, that was not the first time a woman took off her pants in his car.
I was also thinking
why he was not concerned.
Yeah, I would also say, like, if somebody's going to have to be like an unhappy passenger, I think a woman taking off her pants in the back of the car makes the drive a little bit better for the Uber driver, right?
Slightly, yes, I'm sure. Yeah, you tip me all you want, buddy. It's all good.
Yeah. All right, so let's dive into a couple of big questions here. So yesterday on the show, we got into a big discussion. We took calls on J-Lo Shakira, right,
mm-hmm.
During the Super Bowl. So we had some women call in. I think we started with an 83-year-old woman out of Louisiana, everybody loved. Yeah, she was fantastic. So what was your reaction to the Super Bowl halftime show?
So... okay, so first of all, I think that we're always going to find something to be upset about, particularly when it's artists pushing the envelope, right? I mean, like from Elvis to Eminem to Madonna. I mean, I grew up at 7 years old watching Madonna, roll around on the floor in a wedding dress at the VMAs. I'm sure my parents weren't very happy about that at the time. And I think it's twofold for me, right? So I think from a 43-year-old woman who saw two extremely successful, beautiful, talented women up on that stage owning it, right? Completely owning it and just killing it. I thought it was an amazing performance. I love artists. I love music. I loved the performance. I thought that they just completely dominated. But I have to be honest with you, there were some times where I glanced over at my 10-year-old boys just to see their reaction to what was going on the screen. But that's not just to J-Lo and Shakira. That's anytime we're watching anything that they're exposed to something
right.
new. Right. And I just think that's part of being a parent. Listen, I understand. Listen, I'm completely open to people's perceptions and to people's feelings and their opinions. And I can understand why people who maybe are a little bit more conservative could be upset by that. But I was not. I thought it was great. I think it's my responsibility as a parent to my kids to kind of watch their reactions, and that's what I did. It's funny, though, Clay, walking away from the Super Bowl, the thing that my kids were talking about more was the Bubble Butt commercial with all of the NFL players and their glutes, right? I mean, that was the one that they walked away saying, Mommy, do you think that was a little inappropriate? I certainly didn't think so, but that was the one that they walked away talking the most about.
You'll appreciate this. I think a lot of the audience will, too. So yesterday, I'm driving in my car, and my son in the back seat, my 9-year-old, you have 10-year-old boys, but he says, Dad, do you want some of these? And I was like, yeah, you probably already know where we're headed here. And I just like was led completely over the middle because I'm like, I'm thinking maybe he's got a snack in the back or something. Like we're driving.
Setting you up, man.
Yeah, oh,
setting
yeah. He was setting me up. A lot of people know what the punchline here is going to be. But we were driving to basketball practice last night. I'm one of the coaches on his 9-year-old, 8-year-old basketball team. And so I'm thinking like maybe his mom gave him a snack, you know, and he's eating something in the back. And so I'm like, these what? And he says, these nuts. And so like this was, I think, like both. Well, first of all, he got me. And then he's like, got you. And like, but also I was really kind of proud, you know, that he's breaking out that joke because it's kind of a staple of male adolescent humor. And maybe he's gotten to it a little bit early in third grade. But that I thought was indicative. You're talking about your 10-year-old, so it was reminding mm-hmm. me of what he did for me. But it is interesting to watch things. I think as a parent, you start to move from watching things through your own eyes to watching things through your kids' eyes. And I think one of the challenges is as a parent trying to recognize what your kids are sort of taking away from something versus mm-hmm. what you think they might be taking away. And we talked about, for instance, I know we got a lot of people who start off the day with their kids, but like somebody called in and said like, oh, it's a stripper pole that J-Lo is on. But if your mm-hmm. kids are young, they don't really know what a stripper pole is unless you're really kind of exposing them to a lot. They're thinking, you know, it's just somebody dancing on like a Cirque du Soleil pole, right? I mean, like, so it's a different way of looking at it.
Yeah, my kids have been to Cirque du Soleil. So, right? I mean, that's a really, really valid point. And I think it's just being prepared for their reactions, right? But listen, Clay, it's not just, you know, Shakira and Jennifer Lopez up on a stage. I mean, I don't know if you've seen the Guardian of the Galaxy movie, and I just thought of this. Like the opening scene where the mom is like dying in a hospital bed. Like I fast forward through that with my kids because I don't want them then to be like all that night, you know, crying to me because they think that. So I think that it's everything. And by the way, this is what Shakira and Jennifer Lopez do. This is what performers do. You watch the VMAs, you watch the Grammys, you watch any of these things. Like this is what we do. They're artists. They're going out there and they're performing. Again, I do understand some people saying that maybe it wasn't appropriate. I get it, right? I get it. There are people that are more conservative out there than me. There are people whose limit of offensiveness is greater than me. I grew up around Two Live Crew. I grew up around, like I mentioned, Madonna, right? I'm not offended by things, particularly music and performances, but I do understand it.
Here's a question for you that we had. We got into a big debate about this, and we're talking to Shannon Spake. You can go follow her on Twitter, I think, at Shannon Spake, if I'm not mistaken. It's easy to find.
I think that's what it is.
All right, you can tell her what you think about the hit. But so a couple things. I had this discussion with my wife. Adam Levine performs last year as a part of Maroon 5. He takes his shirt off. He's dancing around suggestively because he's a sexy male artist whose audience is vast majority female. I didn't see a single person complaining about the sexualization of his performance or the revealing nature of his clothing attire, right? Not one single person did I see talking about it. Is this a standard where women are being held to a different standard? Because what I said, look, is if you go to the beach, the women are wearing less clothes than the moms and the girls and the teenagers and everybody else are wearing less clothes than J-Lo and Shakira had on. And Adam Levine showed more of his body, arguably, than either of the women did. Nobody even blinks. Is this a double standard in some way?
Or you walk through the grocery store, right? And
yeah.
Cosmopolitan or Self. I mean, my kids plenty of times have picked up one of those magazines and said, Mom, look, these are her boobies. You know what
yeah,
I'm saying?
Right.
And
yes.
And you can see it right there. Listen, Clay, it is, right? I mean, guys can walk around the beach. I work in racing. Guys walk around the racetrack without their tops on, and it's certainly not the same for women. But I just think, I mean, that we know why that's the case, right? I mean, women and men are, I mean, we don't have to have this conversation, right? It's just different. I don't think it's a different standard. I didn't hate Adam Levine up there last year, gotta
right.
be honest with you. I'm sure your wife didn't either. And again, I didn't hate the Shakira thing, but I think I do remember some people asking why there wasn't that double standard last year. So I think there were conversations about that. But again, I think it's, yes, right? I mean, women are always going to be held to different standards than men. I don't remember the comedian who went out there and was taking pictures with her top off, like on a horse and stuff, trying
Chelsea
to make
Handler,
a point.
Right.
Right. What about the women at the World Series who were trying to make a point? Right.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just different. It's just different.
All right. The other thing we got into, and I thought this was an interesting discussion, and I'm curious, are you weighing in? I don't ever hear a man criticize another man for his job because it demeans masculinity? And this is an interesting question I just want people to think about in general out there. And this sometimes drives people crazy, but I say I'm a feminist. And the reason why I say I'm a feminist is because ultimately I believe in the power of the individual. I think you or any other woman out there should have the right to do any legal job that you want to do in the same way that any man out there can do any legal job that he wants to do. And in my entire life, Shannon, I have never heard a man say about another man, he's making other men look bad. Really. I mean, in terms of a job, in terms of a profession, right? I got emails after the J-Lo performance and Shakira performance from listeners. And they said, well, what would you think if that was your wife or that was your daughter up on the stage? And my answer is, I would be so proud if my wife or my daughter was successful enough, and I don't have a daughter, but if they were successful enough to one day perform at the Super Bowl, the amount of work and energy and talent and effort that would go into getting that offer would blow me away, and I would be so insanely proud of it. But I think there are a lot of guys out there listening right now, and you're like, yeah, you know what? I've never heard a man criticize another man for making men look bad based on what he does for a living. I've never heard it in my life. Maybe I've missed it, but I've never heard it. It seems to me like women spend a lot of time criticizing other women for how they make other women look or feel, and that doesn't happen very much in masculine society. Do you agree with that? Why do you think it is?
I think women are harder on other women, for sure. I mean, how many times have you heard the old saying, like, women don't get dressed up for men, they get dressed up for the other women in the room, right? I definitely think that women hold women to a higher standard. And I definitely think, I mean, I've encountered it my entire life. Recently, I've encountered it as an adult where a woman has tried to, not in my direct circles and not at Fox Sports, but certainly when I attend events or those things, I see that, right? You see that. And that is why I try really hard not to be that way. And I have from the very beginning. Listen, there are certainly times in my career, Clay, where I've felt jealousy and maybe sometimes I've manifested that jealousy in a way, right, to knock someone down. But I have really worked on that over my career to try to build women up, because I think that that is so vital. And, but it is certainly a part of it. It's something that I think we've all dealt with from day one, from kindergarten, right? Where there's going to be that group of girls or that. But I do think it's changing. I think the conversation is out there so much more than it ever was when we were growing up about strong women supporting other strong women. And it's something I try every single day to do, whether it's like send someone a text when I see them on TV doing something, or, you know, or reach out to them, even if it's not something good, if it's something bad, if it is something good, to try to lift them up and to try to set that example.
All right, here's an interesting theory too. My wife was talking about this. I wrote about it. She said, you know what? If J-Lo and Shakira weren't incredibly good looking, and you're a mom who's, I think, the same age basically as Shakira.
Yeah,
my wife is 40 as well. Got three kids. You've got two. Like, it's harder to be in great shape once you're a mom. So the fact that J-Lo is 50 with no God knows how many kids and looks as good as she does, Shakira's 43 with her kids, and they are still so incredibly sexy on the stage, their sexiness was used against them. But I want to spin this a little bit. If it had been two women who are not particularly attractive, right, like two, let's say, substantially obese women putting on a performance that was similar, dressed in a sexy fashion, if you had criticized them, you would have been fat shaming. So in some way, it appears to me that J-Lo and Shakira are being criticized because they're good looking, right? Like, if these were two women who weren't as attractive as J-Lo and Shakira are, then it would have been offensive to say anything negative about their sexy performance.
It's just part of it though, Clay, right? It's part of like, but I think if they hadn't gone out there and looked the way they did, I mean, we were going to be talking about the fact that they should have looked a little different. This is the Super Bowl. Why didn't they do something? Why didn't they glam it up? Why didn't they do something spectacular? I don't think that there was any way for them to win. Did you, by the way, see the picture of J-Lo, like, in her plane, like, flying out? She posted on Instagram where she's just, like, sitting back, like, chilling, like, just, I mean, it was awesome, right? Because she doesn't care. She is doing her thing, and you have to block out those haters. Listen, when I talk to kids, like when I talk to college kids that are wanting to get into this industry or any industry, I tell them the number one thing they have to do moving forward is to block out distractions. because this world nowadays, we have so many of them, and particularly with social media. And the distractions are what's going to pull you off your path, right? You're going to start listening to this. God knows I did when I was younger. Start listening to this, start listening to that, and you're going to change who you are. And those two women were up there. They did their thing, and they just kept pushing forward.
I hope that J-Lo and Shakira aren't reading through their Twitter mentions, but I always tell people who are young, you know, sometimes turn off the Twitter mentions because you will get too wrapped up in your head if you're worried about what other people are saying about
Heck
you.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, especially if you're young, because you worry so much about how other people portray you. And I do think with age comes wisdom, but it also comes an ability to just say, I don't care, right? Like, I've got three
boys. I don't care, Clay. I think it's like, look at all the things that I've done, you know? Like, I have children. I raise my children. I have a career. I do this. I think it's more of that, right? It's certainly everybody wants to be liked in some way, shape, or form. But I think it's the fact that you just look at the things that you've done and you've been able to accomplish and focus on those things.
And we've got a couple of big deals that are going on. We've got a big trade in Major League Baseball. We've got a big trade in the NBA. We've been talking about that throughout the program. It's National Signing Day Part 2. But also NASCAR is about to be back.
Yeah.
What are you doing to get ready for NASCAR?
Well, as you know, because we were down there all week doing Race Hub, we're back on the air. It's crazy. We're starting to grind it out again. We're doing shows this week from our studio. We've had guests on. The Hall of Fame was this past weekend. Joe Gibbs, now the only guy to be inducted into a NASCAR
Very
Hall of
cool.
Fame and an NFL Hall of Fame. Yeah, I mean, and then he was at the Super Bowl Sunday with the NFL 100. So a great week for him. We have cars on the track this weekend. We have the Clash this weekend, which is a non-points race. We're just the best of the best. Go out there and race. And then the Daytona 500 next week, which is the Super Bowl of our sport. And everybody always says, why are you going to start the season with the Super Bowl of your sport? It's because it's Daytona, and that's how we do it. We start it, and it's the greatest spectacle. Usually sold out. It'll be on Fox, and you win that race, and your career is set.
She is Shannon Spake. We will talk to her next week as she gets ready for NASCAR. Outstanding stuff, as always. Thanks for the time, and get ready and enjoy with Daytona coming up.
Thank you, Clay.
Final segment of the day. We've got Tom Izzo firing off angrily, and we break down one more time Major League Baseball, NBA trades, as well as National Signing Day. Much going on. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.